On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Diet.
And I'm Andrina Hoff. Coming up...
I am devastated by the deaths and injuries that have occurred, and my prayers go out to the victims and their families.
The Australian girlfriend of the Las Vegas gunman releases a statement saying she had no idea what he was planning.
Also tonight, the US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson sidesteps questions over whether he called Donald Trump a moron.
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington.
And we'll preview tonight's clash between the Socceroos and Syria in Malaysia.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Andrina Hoff. State and territory leaders have agreed to the government's push to strengthen anti-terror laws. This includes measures such as holding terror suspects without charge for up to a fortnight, as well as the creation of a national database of driver's license photos to help identify suspects in public spaces in real time. There will also be new laws regarding the possession of instructional terrorist material and stronger laws against terrorism hoaxes. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has praised officials for their work.
We're committed to ensuring that our agencies have the tools, the legislative tools and the resources and the techniques to keep Australians safe and to respond and prevent terrorist incidents. We know that we have got to be constantly vigilant. You know, I've said many times and that there is no place for set and forget when it comes to national security.
Gun control advocates say Australia is at risk of another mass shooting if the national approach to gun control isn't tightened. A report by Gun Control Australia claims regulations have been watered down, with no state or territory complying with the National Firearms Agreement, introduced in the wake of the Port Arthur massacre in 1996. It points to erosions in the laws, such as allowing minors to possess and use firearms without a permit, the removal of a cooling-off period when acquiring a second or subsequent hunting rifle, and allowing unlicensed members of the public to shoot at gun clubs. It comes as Federal Opposition Leader Bill Shorten has called for a national gun amnesty to be extended until the end of the year.
The Turnbull government proposed an amnesty for a period of time. That was a good idea. 28,000 weapons emerged. I think we need to extend it. And I also think that we need to put our foot down and say that if you are a gun smuggler, if you're running a criminal syndicate bringing in illegal firearms to Australia, you could face up to life imprisonment.
Authorities in the US city of Las Vegas have revealed more details about the shooting attack on a country music festival, which left 59 people dead, including the gunman, and 489 injured. It's been revealed 64-year-old Stephen Paddock had 1,600 rounds of ammunition and several containers of an explosive used in target shooting in his car. He also rented a room in the city around the same time as an alternative music festival was held, just weeks earlier, but officials aren't yet sure of the reasons behind this. Sheriff Joe Lombardo says there could be aspects of the case that they may never be able to fully explain.
What we know is Stephen Paddock is a man who spent decades acquiring weapons and ammo and living a secret life, much of which will never be fully understood. He meticulously planned on the worst domestic attack in United States history.
Meanwhile, Mr. Paddock's Filipina-Australian girlfriend says she had no idea he was planning violence against anyone. Officials have questioned Mary Lou Danley over her partner's weapons purchases, a $128,000 wire transfer to a Philippine bank, and whether she saw any changes in his behaviour before she left the US. Officials in Catalonia say they may move as soon as Monday to declare independence from Spain, as part of a crisis that is threatening to rupture Spain's democratic foundations. Catalan President Carles Puigdemont has called for mediation to find a solution to the situation, but Spain's central government has rejected the idea, accusing Mr. Puigdemont of going against the law. Participants in the weekend's independence referendum voted overwhelmingly in favour of secession, but turnout was only about 43%, as Catalans who want to remain part of Spain mainly boycotted the ballot. To sport now, and Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou says his side is ready to take on Syria in tonight's World Cup qualifier playoff in Malaysia. Australia needs to beat Syria over two legs or else miss the showpiece tournament for the first time since their 2006 qualification for Germany. Veteran Tim Cahill, who will miss Melbourne City's opening A-League clash with Brisbane, says it's an important match.
It's the cutthroat time that if we don't win over these two games, you're out. Yes, you want to go through in the group, but you also understand how difficult it is to qualify and now how ruthless this qualifying stages can be for us. So two games, like I said, you know, we really want to dictate the game tomorrow and pretty much stay the same that we have in every game. We want to dominate the ball and we want to win.
And now taking a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth will be partly cloudy and 21. Similar conditions for Adelaide, 20 degrees. Melbourne will see a shower or two clearing and 16. Showers clearing too for Hobart and 15 degrees. Canberra will be partly cloudy and 22. More cloud also for Wollongong, 22 degrees as well. Sydney will be cloudy with a chance of rain and 23. Newcastle will see a possible shower and 24. Brisbane will see a shower or two with a gusty storm, 30 degrees. 31 degrees for Cairns with a possible shower. And Darwin, chance of a storm, and 33. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News with Michael Tomalaris at 6:30.
Thanks, Andrea. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. Police in Las Vegas say the gunman who shot hundreds of people had led a secret life over at least the last decade. Sheriff Joseph Lombardo has also confirmed reports that Stephen Paddock rented rooms in an apartment building that overlooked another music festival about a week before the massacre. SBS correspondent Maggie Palmer is in Las Vegas.
A bit over a week before this shooting, we now know that the shooter actually rented another hotel room that was actually being rented through Airbnb that was in the vicinity of another music festival. So authorities looking at this lead very closely to try and work out exactly what happened in those days and weeks leading up to the shooting here in Vegas.
He said at the press conference that it was troublesome that Paddock could move around all that ammunition seemingly unassisted. And he also made the point that the investigators are nowhere near knowing what, quote, the individual's trigger point was. In other words, what the motivation was for him to do that harm.
We haven't understood it yet. And I think it's important for us to get to there. And you have to be patient with us. Because this premeditation of this room, this is well thought out. So don't you think the concealment of his history or his life was well thought out? And it's incumbent upon us as professionals to figure that out.
Motive is the big question mark here. Like, what is it that would drive a retiree who we know had quite a lot of money to commit this senseless act? And in fact, he had so many weapons and so much ammunition and so many other arsenal in his possession that police here are really a little bit dubious that he was acting alone. They say that they're not making any assumptions, but certainly reading between the lines here, it seems to me that they suspect that there was certainly someone else involved.
We heard from the lawyer for Paddock's Australian girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, who's back in the United States now. She released that statement saying basically she had no idea what Paddock was up to.
Yeah, she says he was a really quiet and caring man. She says that she was really looking forward to a retirement together and that she had no idea that he was capable of doing this. Interestingly, investigators have revealed that large sums of money were transferred from the shooter to her in the Philippines. We understand it was more than $100,000. She says that that money was to be used to help buy her family a house. She was not in the United States at the time of the attack. She says that she'd flown to the Philippines because he had gifted her with a cheap airline ticket to go back and see her family. But authorities obviously speaking with her at the moment, and as we understand, she is cooperating with the FBI.
And finally, President Trump was in town, but I understand, Maggie, that he sidestepped questions on gun laws.
He did. We were at the hospital today when President Trump was visiting with medical staff and survivors. He was more interested in talking about fake news than he was in talking about gun reform, but certainly he's going to have a lot of questions to answer. And really, the United States is going to be looking for leadership from him when he gets back to Washington, because this is really a country divided here at the moment. over the issue of both his presidency and also gun control.
Maggie Palmer in Las Vegas. Well, speaking of gun control, Australia is often held up as an international example of best practice, but new research released today has found that compliance with firearms regulations is starting to slip. Matt Kinnellan has the details.
The US is reeling from another mass shooting, but Australians enjoy the protection of gun laws enacted in the wake of the Port Arthur massacre in Tasmania in 1996. Then Prime Minister John Howard banned semi-automatic rifles and pump-action shotguns, while the government bought back and destroyed nearly 700,000 firearms. But a report released today by Gun Control Australia says no state or territory has ever fully complied with firearms resolutions. Samantha Lee from Gun Control Australia says gun ownership is increasing.
Our gun numbers are on the rise, and there's no doubt in my mind that that is a connection with the diluting of our gun laws. We need to reduce the number of guns in the legal market so they don't flow into the illegal market.
In New South Wales, semi-automatics are permitted for shooters whose occupation isn't pest control. Queensland and South Australia allow possession of a pistol or revolver during the first 6 months of a handgun licence. In WA, Victoria and the Northern Territory, permits for a second firearm may be exempt from the 28-day cooling-off period. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews says he's already taken steps to limit the possession of illegal firearms in his state.
We, very early on in our term in office, changed illegal firearms laws across our state, very significant penalties. We've got some bills in the Parliament at the moment that deal with giving to Victoria Police extraordinary powers of search and seizure where there's a reasonable suspicion that illegal firearms are involved.
Federal opposition leader Bill Shorten is calling for an extension on the nationwide gun amnesty, which ended last week. Around 28,000 guns have been surrendered in the last 3 months, although it's believed there are still 600,000 firearms in Australia. Mr. Shorten told Channel 9 there needs to be a crackdown on gun smugglers.
We need to put our foot down and say that if you are a gun smuggler, if you're running a criminal syndicate bringing in illegal firearms to Australia, you could face up to life imprisonment.
At today's COAG meeting in Canberra, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull defended the states and territories' commitment to gun control.
I'm satisfied that all of the jurisdictions represented here are absolutely united in our commitment to maintaining the strong and strict gun control laws and the National Firearms Agreement that everyone is a party to and that was put in place more than 20 years ago by John Howard.
Children's charity, the Alana and Madeline Foundation, was established after the Port Arthur massacre. Alana and Madeline Mikak, aged 6 and 3, and their mother were among the 35 people who were shot and killed. The Foundation's Leslie Podesta says Australia needs to continue to lead the way in gun control.
I do sadly think that we have a lot to learn from what's happened in the United States. Australia has made such a massive difference. We've got to continue to take that role and not be swayed by sectional interests within certain states and territories.
Despite the warnings, Australia remains the world leader in reducing gun-related deaths, with no mass shootings since Port Arthur.
Matt Kinnellan with that report. Still to come tonight, a new campaign aiming to combat racism in Australia with a particular focus on African and Indigenous Australians.
The site managers actually said during their meetings, you know, that they actually didn't want to give us boys a go, Aboriginal boys from Robin a go, because, you know, payday we're going to get pissed and we're not going to turn up for work.
We'll hear from a man who used to work in construction and his experiences of racism on the job. That's still to come on SBS World News Radio. To the United States now, where the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, has refuted reports he considered quitting over a rift with the president. In a hastily arranged news conference, he pledged his loyalty to Donald Trump, but he didn't deny calling him a moron. Rosemary Bolger reports.
United States Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is not fond of fronting the cameras, but he called a press conference after a report that he threatened to quit during the northern summer. The report by the US television network NBC suggested the former ExxonMobil chief executive came close to resigning as the country's top diplomat. Mr. Tillerson says the report was erroneous.
I think it's the most important element of the article is to reaffirm my commitment to this role that President Trump's asked me to serve and to dispel with this notion that I have ever considered leaving. I have answered that question repeatedly. For some reason, it continues to be misreported. There's never been a consideration in my mind to leave. I serve at the appointment of the president, and I'm here for as long as the president feels I can be useful to achieving his objectives.
But it was what Mr. Tillerson didn't deny that has fanned further reports of tensions between him and the president. He was asked at least twice about a key element of the report, that he called the president a moron after a July meeting at the Pentagon. Each time, he sidestepped the question.
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
Differences between the brash approach to foreign policy of the president and the more careful strategy of Mr. Tillerson have been obvious over recent months. Most recently, President Trump undermined his diplomatic efforts to defuse the North Korea situation. Mr. Tillerson was in Beijing talking with Chinese leaders about tightening sanctions on North Korea when the president took to Twitter, telling him not to waste his time. He tweeted, "Save your energy, Rex. We'll do what has to be done." The NBC report says the low point in the relationship between the two actually came before the humiliating tweet. Mr. Tillerson, who once headed up the Boy Scouts of America, was reportedly furious about a highly politicized speech Mr. Trump delivered to the organization in July. Three officials relied upon by NBC said it was a few days earlier that the Secretary of State had allegedly made the moron comment. While Mr. Tillerson did not want to discuss that comment with the media, U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert says he was clear with her.
The secretary did not use that type of language to speak about the president of the United States. He does not use that language to speak about anyone.
Mr. Tillerson's spokeswoman suggested his inexperience in front of the cameras led to him not responding to the media directly. She had a message for people she said she believes want him to resign.
Go ahead and keep pushing because that will only strengthen his resolve.
While visiting survivors of the Las Vegas shooting in hospital, President Trump has offered a brief comment on Mr. Tillerson, expressing complete confidence in him.
I'm very honored by his comments. It was fake news. It was a totally phony story. Thank you very much. It was made up. It was made up by NBC. They just made it up.
Donald Trump ending that story by Rosemary Bolger. Well, coming up, a preview of tonight's clash between the Socceroos and Syria from Darren Mara.
I think it's in the Socceroos' hands. Man to man, they're a better squad, I believe. If they can get over their lack of goal scoring, lack of taking opportunities, I think the Socceroos can come away with a win. I'm tipping a win by at least one or two goals.
20 past six now. An anti-racism campaign is aiming to combat the racism experienced by Indigenous and African Australians. The Australian Human Rights Commission campaign, called Racism, It Stops With Me, will see advertisements screened on TV and social media over the next 2 months. Andrea Niehoff reports.
Of all the complaints received by the Australian Human Rights Commission, comparatively high numbers come from Indigenous and African Australians. In 2015-16, 54% of Racial Discrimination Act complaints received by the Commission came from Indigenous Australians. A large number of complaints related to employment. Professor Kevin Dunn from the University of Western Sydney says racism in the workplace and in places of education is quite significant.
The average experience of racism might be at about 20%, but for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, the rate's at 50%, so more than double. Similarly, in education, Aboriginal Australians, 57% report that they've experienced racism in an educational setting, where it's only 32% for people who are not of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander background.
Indigenous filmmaker Tyson Moran from Western Australia's Pilbara region remembers being a victim of racism in the days when he was a construction worker.
The site managers actually said during their meetings, you know, that they actually didn't want to give us boys a go, Aboriginal boys from Robin a go, because, you know, payday we're going to get pissed and we're not going to turn up for work.
For Race Discrimination Commissioner Tim Soutphommasane, one of the goals of the campaign is reducing what he calls everyday or casual racism.
We know that racism comes in many forms. Often it is everyday casual racism that is expressed, and it's important that people feel comfortable and confident enough about speaking back and doing something about it. All too often people are just idle bystanders. These videos are really about getting people to stand up and act.
The Race Discrimination Commissioner Tim Soutphommasane. Well, China has announced a bold plan to establish 500 smart cities nationwide by the end of this year. Using cloud technology and artificial intelligence, the cities will collect and centralise data on everything from transport and waste management to pollution and crime. The government says smart cities will improve urban planning and boost the economy. But critics say it's all about tightening control. Here's Katrina Yu.
Around Beijing, there are dozens of so-called smart stores. They're not run by staff, but by AI, or artificially intelligent technology. A facial recognition camera unlocks the entrance door after recognizing a registered customer. After choosing goods, shoppers use mobile phones to pay for items. Smart store customer Hu Guangchong says he prefers it.
The whole shopping experience is very quick. You choose your items, you pay, and go. If you go to other convenience stores like 7-Eleven, the space is really small. You have to wait in a line, then pay with cash. It's a lot of trouble compared to this.
First-time customers use their phones to scan a barcode at the front door, then follow instructions to upload a selfie. In seconds, personal data is stored. Artificially intelligent cameras will then scan the customer's face and be allowed inside. Now, similar technology is being applied to entire cities. China plans to transform 500 urban centres into so-called smart cities by the end of the year. Walter Fang is the executive vice president of Beijing-based company iSoftStone, a software developer helping build smart city networks for 80 Chinese cities.
Smart city is using all these latest technologies to understand, to capture all the data and have more insight for the city leaders.
From tracking traffic and energy consumption to monitoring pollution and crowds, Walter Fang's company designs systems which can integrate and analyze masses of data using cloud-based networks, sensors, and security cameras. In major cities, there are CCTV cameras on every street corner. The Chinese government says a smart city is a safe city, and that means surveillance is ever-present. But these cameras do more than just record a scene. Beijing tech startup SenseTime develops smart cameras which can identify personal features, monitor trajectory and speed, and track a person's whereabouts in another part of the city. Their AI-based technology can even detect and report suspicious behavior to prevent crime.
Previously, most of cameras are monitored by a person, and our technologies can actually surpass the human level accuracy in facial recognition, object classification, and that's why we could use these technologies to make the camera smarter.
And that report by Katrina Yu in Beijing. Well, to sport, and the Socceroos are taking on Syria tonight in the first leg of their World Cup qualification playoff against the Middle Eastern Minnows. The game will be in Malaysia, and SBS reporter Darren Mara is travelling with the Australian team.
The team basically arrived over about a day and a half starting from Monday, so they've been in camp now for about, I'd say, a day and a half. They've had two larger training sessions, you could say, but those sessions have been pretty subdued, more like recovery sessions, because a lot of the players are coming from Europe, having played for their clubs over the weekend. But in all, the preparation's going pretty well. The team's relatively relaxed. We're quite lucky in that we're staying in the same hotel as the team, so I've seen the players around quite a bit in the foyer, in the pool, and there's quite a relaxed but determined, I guess, attitude to this match. As I said, some of the players are coming from European clubs and they're in good form, goal-scoring form. You've got players like Matthew Lecky at Hertha Berlin in Germany who's scoring. Robbie Cruz playing with Bochum in Germany also scoring. Tommy Rogic with Celtic in Scotland also getting on the score sheet. Aaron Moy with Huddersfield also getting lots of minutes in his legs. So I'd say the mood is positive and good. And I think... we're just looking forward to this match tonight.
There are some concerns, I understand, about the playing conditions.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. The pitch, it's the grass that's laid on the pitch at the Hung Jebat Stadium, it's known as cow grass. So it's like a thicker, sturdier type of grass as opposed to the smoother surfaces you might get in Australia or other parts of the world. And what it means basically is that the ball will bobble quite a bit. It won't roll as smoothly and as truly as it would on the ground that a lot of the Socceroos players are used to playing on. So that could affect their ability to play the kind of game that Socceroos coach Ange Postecoglou typically likes to play, which is fast pace, lots of passing on the ground, taking it to the opponents. If it's harder to control the ball, it makes it harder to basically enact that game plan. So that could play into the Syrians' hands. The other factor, of course, is the humidity and the temperature. It's currently around 32 degrees here. It's expected to drop off a little bit tonight before the match, but humidity will probably stay up at around 80%. And after the training sessions yesterday and Tuesday, just having a look at the players, you know, they were sweat-drenched. You know, they were looking tired, exhausted. So it's going to mean that Ange Postecoglou will likely have to rotate his squad quite a lot, because it's not just tonight's match that he needs to keep an eye on. It's also the match next Tuesday, the second leg in Sydney. So he'll have to play this over 180 minutes, not just 90 minutes.
So, Darren, are you going to call it? Any tips? Australia or Syria?
I don't want to put the mocker on the Socceroos, but I think it's in the Socceroos' hands. Man to man, they're a better squad, I believe. I think if they can get over their lack of goal scoring, lack of taking opportunities, I think the Socceroos can come away with a win. I'm tipping a win by at least one or two goals.
We'll see. Darren Mara in Malaysia. Time now to check the news headlines. A new report shows that more Australians are dying or ending up in custody overseas. Thailand and the Philippines recorded the highest amount of deaths, while Australians are increasingly finding themselves behind bars in China and the United Arab Emirates. A court in Turkey has sentenced 40 people to life in jail for attempting to assassinate President Recep Tayyip Erdogan during last year's failed coup attempt. And Iraqi forces say they've captured the town of Hawija and the surrounding area from IS. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Michael Tomalaris bringing you SBS News right across Australia at 6:30. If you're not near a TV, you can live stream Mike. Go to our website, sbs.com.au/news, and you'll be able to live stream the bulletin. You can also get our content in your Facebook news feed. All you have to do is like our page, SBS World News. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow us, our Twitter handle, @SBS News. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening this evening.